My name is Jim Hawkins, and I'm an alcoholic. It has not been necessary for me to take a drink since December the 8th, 1955. Tell that for two reasons. A lot of you have heard it. I have gone to a lot of AA in some countries where they, when you say I'm an alcoholic, they say, how long you been sober? If you don't give your sobriety date, they wonder if you got one. So I do that. I learned a long time ago. And then another reason I do that is because a while back, Mickey and I were out in Amarillo at the top of Texas Roundup, and we met an old boy that got up. His name was Whistler Wilson. And Whistler gave me this story. There's been a lot of guys stole it. But it's mine. He got up and he said, my name is Whistler Wilson. And it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink in 6 months. He introduced another good friend of mine from Dallas and sat down. He sat down near me, and an old boy leaned over from behind. He said, Whistler, you was drunk 2 weeks ago. He said, I know that. But by God, it wasn't necessary. You heard a story yesterday morning that I'm going to try to straighten out. First of all, I'd like to tell you, I ran into C.D. while ago in the hall, and seeing him reminded me of something that is very important to me, because we've been on some programs together around the country, and I remembered something he said from the podium. And when he said this, I remembered that Mickey and I we have a habit of doing some things that he mentioned. Mickey and I have been married 41 years, and will be 42 years in December. And we drive down the highway holding hands because I love her. And she loves me. And this program is what cemented that for us. We have 3 children, 9 grandchildren. I don't even have 4. Four great grandchildren. That ain't bad. I like to talk about the second part of our program. I have some very dear friends, and I'm not going to start calling names. I have some very dear friends here. Some I've known for 30 years, at least one. And I love you very much, and it's a great honor to be at the Atlanta Roundup. It's a great honor to be anywhere clean, and I'm like old John Dobbs. They run me through the car wash this morning and clean me up, but it's great to be here. It's a great honor to be to this. I was at the first Roundup you had. I chaired a meeting. I believe it was the first one. And chaired a meeting and didn't get to stay, and I felt bad about it. But I've got to stay, and this has been a fantastic weekend up to just about 2 minutes ago. And then it started. Sometimes it runs down my leg, sometimes it don't. But it's great to be here. And I like to talk about... I like to talk about what happened. Because to me, that's the real treasure of this program. If it hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been here. You know what it was like if you're an alcoholic or an Al-Anon. I don't have to tell you what it was like. Sometimes during the session of this next 40, 45 minutes, I'll refer to before. But what happened? What happened to us as alcoholics that caused us to cross from that devastating area of compulsive and chronic drinking alcohol unto that very very thin, invisible line over into sobriety? How does this come about? How does this come about? And this is what I like to talk about. I like to talk about what happened. Because, brother, it was great when it happened to me. It was great. And you've heard some fantastic statements from some tremendous speakers this weekend, including the one yesterday morning. I had gone to AA in March of 1955. And half of the group was my sponsors. We had about 8 members. And I had 4 sponsors. And I needed 8 sponsors. The other 4 wouldn't work with me. I was the youngest AA member in the entire Birmingham area when I went in. Most of them 31 sober, and look how young I am today. Mickey and I married when we were 9. I think sponsorship is the real heart and soul of Alcoholics Anonymous. Real heart and soul. 3 of mine are dead. One of them's living and he's deaf and he's blind and he's very ill. And when I try to talk about him, I cry a lot. I cry a lot. And it has its advantages. I'll tell you about that later. But I visited AJ last week. And you know how much I love him more than anything else on earth. He's the one that helped us together during that period of time from March until December. I went home one day in the summer of 1955 and got cleaned up, and I told Mickey, I said, I'm going to go downtown. I was going to go down in Bessemer and buy me some liquor. I'd been in AA. I'd been around AA for 2 or 3 months, and I'd been hearing a lot of people talk about slips. And I said, well, hell, I'll have one. I'll just go have one. I deserve one. So I went and got me a sack of liquor, you know, to have a slip. 8 or 10 quarts. If you're going to slip, man, you might as well slip good. Mickey said, now's when you need to call George. George was my number one sponsor at that time. Well, I'd already made up my mind, so I told Mickey, I said, you know, I told Mickey where George could go. I didn't like him anyway. I didn't like him being my sponsor. I didn't like his brand of AA. I didn't like anything about him. And the reason I didn't is because he's sober and he looks happy. I didn't like the look in his eye because I didn't have it. and he talked about something that I didn't want to discuss. And he's mentioned all through our big book. He talked about God a lot. And when he talked about God, there was a certain look came on his face that tore me up. So I went and got the sack of liquor, and I went downtown Birmingham, and I checked in a hotel. Checked in a nice hotel. Now, 2 or 3 weeks later, when AJ came and got me, I had changed hotels. There's such thing as paying your bill. And I don't even remember. I think they've renovated that old hotel and made it a nice one now. And when I was there, it was Flop House. But I went down and checked in that hotel sometime in November of 1955. Sometime in November. My sponsor, AJ, the one that's still living, came and got me on December the 8th. Now, I don't know how long I've been there. I know it was November, and I know they'd already put out decanters with liquor. I love them pretty bottles, those decanters in the Christmas time that everybody came out with. I bought a good supply of them. Going to look at them, you know, next year. But during the period of time that I was in this hotel, is the miraculous thing that happened to Jim Hawkins. One of the reasons I didn't like to hear George talk about God was because of a... when I was brought up in a little town called Princeton. And they're talking about Onyana. I don't even live in Onyana. I couldn't pronounce it for a long time. We live in Lake Highland. We get our mail in Onyana, which is 8 miles away. Now, Lake Highland has a population of 219. When we're all at home. I was raised in a little town called Princeton, had a population of 213. And we had 6 big churches. 213. I went back there years ago, and there's that sign still up, 213. I asked my dad one time, I said, how come the sign never changes? He said, every time a woman gets pregnant, some man leaves town. I don't... Well, it's not that bad at Highland Lake. When we moved there, there was 120. Now there's 219. There's been 99 people moving there. But in this little town where I was raised, my father was a merchant. He's the greatest man that ever lived. He was a merchant at a big general store there. And we went to church every time the door opened, against my will. And I was so afraid that something was going to run over me, because they told me, you don't really have to do it. If you think about it, buddy, you're in trouble. And I thought about it a lot. I was afraid to cross the road, afraid something would wipe me out. I used to wonder, this preacher where we went to church, and I don't mean to be derogatory about this, really. I think the religious organization is one of the greatest institutions on earth, believe me. I believe that, sincerely. And I'm not being critical, please believe me. But this was what I was taught as a child. And you can see why I didn't like George. And I didn't like a lot of them. George Garner was my sponsor, one of my sponsors. He's dead. This church we went to, the preacher taught us. Now, 6 big churches with 300 people, 200 or 300, whatever it was. And I wondered why there were so many. you get every one of us in any one of them. I was 7, 8 years old and I wondered these things. You know, kids think about that stuff. At least I did. How come they got so many? And I found out the guy that talked to us every Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night and Tuesday morning and Thursday afternoon and whenever he saw you, you know, he taught us and said, if you don't go to this one, old buddy, you ain't going to make it. Well, I wanted to make it. But I didn't believe him. I didn't believe him at 7, and I don't believe him at 63. These are some things that I didn't like when I came in there and they talked about God, and I didn't like to hear George talk about it, or Raleigh, R.A.J., or Peggy, and those were all my sponsors. But in this hotel room, sometime during the period of time that I was there, the 2 or 3 weeks, I started thinking about a lot of these things. I started thinking about a lot of the things that George had told me, and AJ, and Raleigh, and Peggy, all of them had worked with me. You know, when I came into AA, if you was 10 minutes late getting to a meeting, they called your house to see what was wrong with you. My sponsors did. I don't do that, because I'm not a good sponsor like they were. I sponsor one old boy down here in Georgia, and you know, I have to call him once in a while and straighten him out. I'm not going to call his name. His name's George, too, of course, y'all. But and he needs a lot of straightening out, believe me. And if you go to a group he goes to, you know what I'm talking about. George told me one time prior to my going into this hotel, he said, Jim, one of these days, you see, because I'd been in and out of AA for 10 months. He said, one of these days, you're going to run out of resources. You're just going to run out. He says, I don't know anything else to tell you other than what I've told you. He'd been sober 5 or 6 years. He said, one day, you're going to have to reach out for something that's greater than anything that we can offer you, that I can tell you. And then up until this period in my life, I had never believed in anything that was intangible. If I couldn't see it or feel it, I didn't believe in it. And these are things that went through my mind. These are the things that went through my mind during the period of transition from a world of nothingness. A world of nothingness. I thought about mine and Mickey's two daughters. She mentioned to you that I'd been married before. I was married before for just a few weeks, a few months, and had a daughter. And I had lost that daughter. And a judge gave me that daughter during the divorce proceedings, and I had run her away. I didn't run her away with physical cruelty. I run her away by ignoring. How more cruel can you be to one of your loved ones than to ignore them? I punished her and I punished Mickey for many years for the things that happened between me and my first wife. And neither one of them was guilty, of course. Those are the things that went through my mind during this period that I was in this hotel room. I remembered the time that I came home after a three-week drunk with my new automobile, half of it still laying down in the southern part of Mississippi, where I had widened a bridge down there. I ain't got time to tell you about that. That was a cattle-buying trip that me and my friend went on that lasted 2 or 3 weeks. I think I will tell you a little about it. You can go on home when you get ready. I was working for a beverage company. See, I was in the beer business when I came to AA. I was working for a beverage company, and I was a route salesman. And I came in off of a route one Friday afternoon, and Jerry called a staff meeting. and he made me general sales manager. And I, you know, the first thought, well, you know, it's about time, you know. And he told everybody what a great sales manager I would be. You know, I agreed with him. And during this meeting, he says, now, Jim, after the meeting is over, I want you to get a hold of Brian. Now, Brian Henshaw was one of our salesmen. And I want you to take him down in Tuscaloosa County tomorrow and teach him how to sell merchandise. And I said, all right. So there's no better place in the world than to prepare your day than at Joe's Tavern down the street. Joe's was our favorite bar, and so that's where Brian and I went to plan our day for the next day. In fact, we were still down there planning it the next day. But anyway, we got the truck out of the warehouse before Jerry and Jimmy got down there. They were the bosses, and we backed the truck out, and he took off, and I went in my car. You know, I had a new car that I owed more on it than it's worth, of course. But we went by and picked up Brian's helper. We used teenage boys on those trucks to help us unload and load and so forth. And some of them were white boys and some of them were black boys. And this is important. You need to remember this. Charlie was our helper, and Charlie was a black boy. About 2 miles out of from the warehouse, I blew my horn, and Charlie and Brian pulled over to the curb, and Brian wanted to know what I wanted. I said, well, it's about time to have a drink. And we had a drink. A couple of blocks, 3 blocks further, I blew the horn again. He pulled over. We had another drink, too. And Bessemer's 11 miles from Birmingham. About noon, we had got to Bessemer. And I said, Brian, I said, Brian, we ain't going to make it today. It's about 60 miles to Tuscaloosa. I said, we're still 40-some miles from down there. I said, I know what we'll do. We'll let Charlie drive the truck, and you get in the car with me, and we'll make better time. We'll have to stop so much. Charlie had more sense than Brian and I put together. He said, Mr. Hawkins, there is a sign on the bulletin board in the office that says that the helpers are not allowed to drive the trucks. And if they do, they'll be immediately terminated, including them and the salesperson. I said, well, you know you're working for the boss today. All right, he said, if you say so, then I'll tell him you said so. But he said, I haven't got any driver's license. And I looked at Charlie, and I looked at Brian, and they were about the same size. You're getting way ahead of me. Same weight. I said, Brian, give him yours. He said, sure. This is pocket gun. When we finally got to Tuscaloosa, Charlie was so drunk he fell out of the truck. Brian had snuck a couple of pints of liquor in that truck, and Charlie had found it. I filled the truck up with gas and sent Charlie back to the warehouse and told him to tell Jerry that we were gone to Arkansas to buy some cattle. Brian had been telling me all night about his ranch. He had 4 acres east of Birmingham. I found out later. It was 4,000 that night. He needed stock. So we went in business together that night. I was going to buy the stock. That makes a lot of sense. So we wound up back home 2 weeks later. You know, this is the kind of stuff. She told you about me staying gone a lot. This is the kind of stuff. These are the crazy things that we think about when we are alone. But the thing that I wanted to say when I started, before I told you all of that story, I haven't told you all of it. I never will forget an old boy we picked up down in Mississippi. He had an A&P suitcase, and, you know, it's a brown bag. He got in the back seat of that car. He said he was going to Mobile. I said, that's where we're headed. And, of course, we was going to Arkansas. After about 3 miles, he decided he had a sister right down at the bottom of the hill. We come upon this bridge down there at the bottom of one of these hills on a narrow road, doing probably all that automobile would make, and it was a big, heavy, powerful car. We drunks like them, sober or drunk, you know. And we were both asleep. About 50 yards before I would have hit this concrete abutment head on, I woke up. And something said, turn left. I was headed straight to that concrete, and I pulled the car to the left, and we slid through that bridge, and we didn't hit that concrete butt, but head on. Because that's where we left a lot of the car. Bumper, and quarter panel, and rear door, and fender, and some of those things. But we went through there. The only thought I had was, how bad have I hurt my automobile? No, not 1 ounce of gratitude for my life being spared. And it was. It was. But the most important thing about this story is when I came home, I drove into the driveway of the house that we owned. A house that we owned. And our little girls were playing across the street. This was a new subdivision. And all the people were in their 20s. Early 20s, middle, late 20s, and everybody had a kid or two. Some had 8 or 10. We had 2. And our kids, they all play together. You know how that is. And our girls were across the street playing. They were about 7 and 8 or 7 and 9 or 6 and 8, something like that. 2 years difference in their age. They came running across the street. You know, they saw the car all tore up, and they hadn't seen me in a week or so. They came running across the street. 10 feet from the time, 10 feet in front of me, they stopped abruptly. And they looked at me with a forced smile on their face and deathly fear in their eyes, because they knew not what to expect from me. During all of this period of time, I would have given this from the elbow down if I could have told my kids that I loved them. I couldn't tell my kids I loved them because I felt unworthy. We know about unworthiness, don't we? We know about self-condemnation. No one on earth condemns us like we do. So I felt unworthy. I felt that good people, good, clean, decent, living people, wanted nothing to do with me. So therefore I withdrew. And I withdrew from society. I had been withdrawing all of my life because I felt guilty because of the things I thought about that preacher I met at 7 or 8 years old. I felt guilty because I couldn't be the type of person that my father wanted me to be. He was a leader in the community, and everybody told me he was. And I couldn't be like Jim Hawkins the first. And so therefore I withdrew. I withdrew from society, and I withdrew from the community, from all the people around me. These are the things that went through this brain that day, and thank God they did. Because I don't think I would have ever crossed that invisible line had it not been for these thoughts, these things that George said, you are going to have to reach out for something stronger and greater than anything you've ever found on earth, Jim, to be sober. And that is when that I came out of that filthy, crummy flophouse room and walked down a long, dreary, dark hallway. See, this hotel that I was in didn't have a restroom in your room. There was one on each floor. And if you was lucky, you could get in it. So I went in there to do the same thing that I went in the restroom to do this morning. Paul saw me in there. I was in there praying. I'll tell you something else. I was in my room praying this morning, and then somebody called me and said, this is God. I'm going to shoot him. He knew what I was doing because he knows me, and I love him for it. But I went in that restroom to do what I normally do. I always ask God to help me before a meeting, and I always do it in a privy somewhere, in a restroom, because that's where I found him. That's where I found him. I'd been looking for him for 30 years, and 31, 32 years, and I never had found him the way I wanted him. And I went into the restroom and I did what George told me to do. He said, try sometime, Jim, just try. Said, ask him something sincerely. And, you know, it's just as plain to me today, 31, almost 32 years later, of all of the grime and the garbage, the human garbage, that was in that restroom that morning when I got on my knees. And I said, God, teach me how to pray. God, teach me how to pray. And the moment I walked into that room, I was living in a world of total nothingness. And you know what I'm talking about. All of you know what I'm talking about. You Al-Anons have the same feeling. You see, the only difference between y'all and us is that you have to face up. We hide. We hide in the bottle. And we run away. But you who are married to us have to face the reality and face the world and make excuses for us. That's why. That's why you need your meetings. And that's why you need your program of Al-Anon so desperately. God bless you. God bless you. I don't know what would have happened in our home had it not been for Al-Anon. God, she needed it. All I said was, God, teach me how to pray. And I felt within a very short time, I don't know what else I said, I don't know how long I stayed in there. I don't know anything about what happened other than when I came out of that restroom, I no longer felt alone. I no longer felt separated from reality. I felt as if a great, great load had been lifted from me, and I felt the presence of a being greater than anything that's ever happened in my life. I thought I'd had a spiritual awakening. And I thought for a long time this is what happened. And then you know there was an Al-Anon straightened me out on the difference between an awakening and an experience. an old long-legged boy from out in Midland, Texas, said an experience is something that comes to pass. Awakening is something that comes to stay. What happened to me in that hotel room that day came to pass. It has never happened that way again. I doubt if it ever will. So I had a spiritual experience. And I think that as much as I was capable of doing, that I worked the first three steps of our program that day. Now, I had bought all of the books when I first went in, and I'd never opened them. Yeah. I can remember when George got up and made the announcement one night, we got to order some literature, who wants a big book? And we didn't have any money in the treasury to buy one. We didn't have any money in the treasury to buy anything. He said, everybody that wants to buy a big book, hold up their hand and I'll collect the money and then we'll order the books. Well, I held up my hand and then I looked all around the room to see who all was watching. You know, old Jim's getting him a book. Old Jim must be on the program, you know. Old Jim wasn't on nothing. The ego trip, I'd been dry for a month or so. That's how it was. But I believe on that morning of December the 8th, 1955, that I found the God of my understanding. I found a spiritual way of life that's second to none, and there's a lot of difference between spirituality and religion. And I'll explain that to you in my own way if I have the time. I think that I discovered something that morning in that filthy, crummy restroom that you can find anywhere on earth that you want to find it, if you're willing, if I am willing to look for it and be willing to have this come about in my life. I found the God of my understanding. I found the love of God deep within me. I think God is love, and love is man. And that's where I found it that morning. I didn't find anything new. I uncovered something that was living deep in the heart of me. I uncovered the grace of God that we talk about in the fellowship of AA. If we are interested in AA, that's what we talk about, is the grace of God, because He's all through it. I didn't want to hear it in the beginning, as I said, but He's all through there. Read the book and you'll find it. Mentioned in the steps several times. And I also believe that if I had not been blessed with a little substance, probably the size of a quarter, I like to think of it as a piece of white velvet that's buried deep in the soul of man, and that is a conscience. If I could have tolerated Jim Hawkins and all of the things about me, I would still be out there drinking. I could not tolerate Jim any longer because that conscience was eating me up. So I asked for help. That's what happened to me. And I haven't had a drink since that day. I haven't stopped trying to work this program since that day. I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to AA meetings. I am actively involved in service. I was a delegate before I knew what that meant. And I'm proud. I've missed very few assemblies in 31 years, two or three. That doesn't make me any different from any other drunk. The only thing is, this is what it takes for Jim Hawkins. I said, I think I worked those three steps as much as I was capable of working them that morning. I had listened to the step one being, you know, powerless over alcohol and life unmanageable. And I didn't want any of that in the beginning, before this hotel incident. To me, the admission of powerlessness was a dimension of weakness. And I wasn't weak. I wasn't weak. I wasn't powerless over anything in my own mind. So I couldn't accept that. But I had another spiritual experience that morning in that hotel room after the restroom incident. I had called A.J. Bailey, my only living sponsor today, on many occasions during this period of time that I was in this hotel room, and he had come after me, and by the time he got up there, I'd be changed my mind. He lived 20 miles from Birmingham, and I'd call him, and he'd come after me, and I wouldn't go, and he'd go back, and George came to see me, and I wouldn't go. And an old boy named G.B. came to see me. Bless his heart, G.B.'s dead. Now, he came to see me and stayed about a week. He decided he'd slip with me. It looked attractive to him when he got there. A.J. worked for a dynamite and nitroglycerin manufacturing company in Bessemer. And he made nitro. You ought to hear him talk about making nitro and DTs. He was supposed to be at work that morning. It was on a Thursday, December the 8th, and I called his home. He had told me several days prior to this morning, "Jim, don't call me anymore until you're ready." I called him that morning. I said, "AJ, this is Jim." He said, "Yeah, Jim, you're ready." Now, this is in the middle of the week, and AJ's supposed to be working, and he was home that morning. Wonder why. He said, "Yeah, Jim, you're ready." I said, "I sure am." I said, "Take a bus or something, because you're going to have to drive my automobile. I can't drive." He said, "Okay." So he came and got me. He took me home, and he did the things that you do all the time. He put me to bed to keep me from dying. And then he went to the meeting, and that's when he told Mickey. She didn't tell you this yesterday, okay. He went to the meeting, and he told Mickey, says, "Well, I got the old boy to bed," and said, "He's mighty sick." Mickey says, "I hope the son of a bitch dies." She didn't say "son of a gun" either. She said it just exactly like I told you, because AJ told me she said that. And then when she got home, she told me that. But I didn't, of course, and I laid there for 10 days or so and had running fits part of the time in the back bedroom. But I came out of there on the following Thursday, I think. And when I came out of there, Mickey said, "There's a meeting tonight. Are you going?" She didn't say, "There's a meeting tonight, honey." She said, "There's a meeting tonight, honey. Jim, are you going?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "I'm going with you." And I said, "Don't. Let me do this." All four of my sponsors called me, and all four of the other members called me and said, "Jim, there's a meeting tonight. We'll come by and get you." And I said, "Please don't. Let me do this thing myself this time." I had to do that, and I hope you understand why. I went to the meeting alone, and I sit in front of the little clubhouse for a long, long time before I went in. I waited until George Garner started the meeting. George was president of our group at that time. And later, though, we took over. Seriously, George had started the meeting, and I eased in, and when you came in the front door, and after you got inside the building, you were in the back, just like you are here. And they wasn't getting many new ones then in Bessemer. And they were desperate for new members. And George stopped the meeting, and he said, "Old Jim's back. Old Jim's back." Those that didn't shake my hand, hug my neck, and kiss me, and they said, they said those few words that meant so much to me, and it means so much to us today. They said, "Welcome home, Jim. We've missed you. We've missed you." That was my third spiritual experience. And there's been so many, many more since then. Like this weekend. Like many weekends. Like all the meetings that I am privileged to attend are spiritual experiences. And I think that's what we're working on. I think a multitude of spiritual experiences will constitute an awakening one day. And that's what we're looking for. I can live and believe and work a spiritual way of life with God's help and yours. Because the spiritual life that I know and the spirituality that I've learned from you and from others has no discipline other than do it the way you feel comfortable, but do it. Do it the way you feel comfortable, but do it. Organized religion has a discipline. Most of them have a discipline I can't follow. I have God in my life, and I know that. And I can see it in many eyes, in the conferences, in the meetings that I go to. And in the eyes of many people this morning, I can see it. It's there. That's what AA is all about. No more, no less. That's what it's all about. My kids and I have been reunited, and I don't have the time to tell you what a great and wonderful experience that was. We have a beautiful life. Sometimes they're at our house longer than we want them. Bring all them grandkids up there. They ain't worth the living daylight out of you. A couple of experiences. A couple of years ago, all the kids were home. This past Christmas, we left town. A couple of years ago, they were all there in our home. We have a beautiful little home. Modest. But there's love oozing out of the cracks. On Christmas morning, we were taking pictures around the house in the den and so forth and all over. I have one daughter that she's as emotional and tender-hearted as I am. Like I told you earlier, I cry a lot. And I can't help it. And I used to try to stop. I used to try to curb it, but I don't anymore. I think it's healthy. And then that other thing that I promised you was a benefit too. About crying. And my daddy taught me this when I was 9 or 10 years old. Said, if you cry a lot, you don't have to pee so much. I heard one of my pigeons talk over in Gadsden a week or so ago on a Sunday, and he used that. That's my story, too. I straightened him out afterwards, too, you can be assured. We were taking pictures in the den that morning, all having a beautiful Christmas day. Nisa is our oldest. I hope I can get through this. Nisa is our oldest daughter, and she's that girl that Mickey was talking about that's going running around that little bum. But she married a fine guy. He was an officer in the Navy, and he's retired. And he's a good guy. He knows everything, but... If you need to know anything, just ask Frank. We were taking these pictures that morning, and Nisa was standing with her back to me. And whoever was taking the picture, probably Karen, our youngest daughter, she said, "Turn around, Nisa, let me get a picture of you and Daddy." She wheeled around, put her arms around me, and looked up. In my face, and we both started bawling. Started bawling because we were happy. See, our kids were raised in Alatine. They grew up in Alatine. And they're fairly actively involved today in Al-Anon. They know about this program. And we don't, you know, I could meet Nisa or Karen, either one, on the corner of 19th Street and 2nd Avenue in Birmingham, and they'd hug my neck and we'd cry a little. If we'd just seen one the night before. And yeah, that don't bother me. If it bothers you, that's tough. Tough. I can be tough, but it's not my nature. And I remember one time a year or so ago, I was getting ready for my birthday. Want to know what I wanted. I said, "I don't need anything." And I didn't think about how literally true that is. I don't need anything. I got everything I need. I got the greatest gal on earth that lives with me. The greatest gal on earth. And let me tell you something, boy. The first night I met her was on a New Year's Eve in Chicago. We were at a New Year's party. That gal, knockout. Beautiful. We had a picture, one of the girls said, one of the daughters said a while back, said, "God, Mama sure was pretty when she was young." I said, "She's a hell of a lot prettier now than she was then." I can see a lot better today than I could see back then. That's what it brought it about. That's what AA has done for me. That's what AA and Al-Anon has done for Mickey and I, and what Al-Anon has done for our kids. Now, if I don't do something with all of this that you have given me, what in the name of God is going to happen to me? I see people, without sounding so critical, I see people come in there and find sobriety, and then they're gone. And then they're gone, you never see them again. I don't know what happens to this kind of person. And one of the things that I think AA is, and I think AA is a program of sharing and giving. And if I ever get to the point where I cannot give, I think I'll die. I think I will die. And I'd like to illustrate that with a very beautiful story that's true that I have been asked to tell by several people. And it's a story that I have told thousands and thousands of times across the country. And that is the story of the two C's. The story of the two C's. These two large bodies of water are fed by one river. The first one that this river flows into, and it's in a distant foreign land. The first sea that this river flows into is one of the most beautiful, beautiful bodies of water on earth. the beautiful green vegetation and the clarity of the water. And the people of that country and the people of this country will travel thousands of miles to peer into the clearness of that lay of that sea. That water flows through that sea and further south into another one. That one is filled with salt and stink. And it's not very pretty. It's not very pretty. And the amazing thing about that is both of them are fed by the same river. One is beautiful and one is ugly. The first one, they're fed by the River Jordan. The first one is the Sea of Galilee. For every drop of water that it receives from the Jordan River, it gives a drop. It keeps nothing. And it maintains all that beauty. It flows further south many miles into another sea, and that is the Dead Sea. And the only escape for water from the Dead Sea is through seepage and evaporation. It gives nothing. I think that's the story of our program. If we don't give what we have been graciously given, then we shall die. I have always known what love is, but I was unable to practice it on many occasions. About 4 years ago, my stepfather died in Texas. My father died 30 years ago. About 4 years ago, I haven't told this but a couple of times, and I have a tremendous time telling it, but I want to share it with you because it's very important to me this morning. I moved my mother back to Alabama and got her a nice apartment just a little ways from where we live, down in Oneonta, and to have her close by. My mother and I were never close. Mickey and my mother were never close. My father and I had a tremendous relationship. Mickey and my father had a tremendous relationship. I was never close to my mother or any members of her family. I am still not close to any members of her family. I never see them. They never come around. But I've always loved my mother very much because of the sacrifices that she made for me. And I was never able to tell her so until possibly 2 years ago. And this is important to me, and bear with me. I always went by my mother's home during the weekdays when I was coming home from the office. It wasn't out of my way, maybe a couple of miles. But I always visited with her when I was coming home from the office in the afternoon. Maybe 5 minutes, maybe an hour, but I went by. On weekends, Mickey or I, one, would take her shopping. And we developed a fairly close relationship. She'd come out to the house and spend the weekend occasionally. But we had never expressed any feeling of caring or loving. One night when I came by from work and got ready to leave, I put my arm around my mother and I says, "I love you." And I meant it. Mama began to cry. And then I went home. And the next day, the same thing. 2 or 3 days later, the same thing. After several days, or maybe weeks, I don't know, I started to leave and I put my arms around her and told her. She says, "I love you." And she says, I've always wanted to tell you that, but I never have. See, I was 61 years old, and I'd never told my mother I loved her. She had never told me. If it hadn't been for this program, if I hadn't been an alcoholic, that would never have come about. What a blessing. What a great blessing. And my mother was very close, her and I were very close until she passed away last year. And I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful to you, and I'm so grateful to God for putting up with me and letting me be a part of this great fellowship. See, all of my life I've known about love because it was expressed in my family with my dad, been expressed with, between Mickey and I and our kids. So that's a great deal, that brings about a great deal of love. I've known what satisfaction was because our children grew up in this program. And they have become great, great ladies. And they have become tremendous mothers. And I think this program had a lot to do with it. And for 41 years, will be 42 in December. In fact, it'll be 43 years in January. I've had this little gal with me all along, all the way. And so many times I didn't see her. And she was always waiting. And if that's not happiness, God, I'd like to know what is. So when you put love, satisfaction, and happiness together, it only leaves one other commodity, and that is wealth. And I am one of the wealthiest human beings on earth. There's not any dollar marks in front of it. No dollar marks. So wealth of you and the God of my understanding. You see, I know today, and I know this morning especially, what makes AA work. Nothing more and nothing less. I know what makes AA work. And if I didn't know this morning, I would know now, because I can see it in your eyes, and I can see it in yours. And I can see it in yours and yours and yours. It's the essence of Almighty God. That's what makes AA work. Thank you.